We feel greatly honored. We know you're going to be delighted, and that this next speaker has seen fit to leave a very busy office and come here to be with us today to help celebrate the 100th anniversary of the publication of the immortal ballad Way Down on the Suwannee River. It is my pleasure to present Mr. Irving Caesar.
I knew that I would be so filled with emotions, my imagination told me that I dared not trust myself to speaking extemporaneously. Therefore, I have put down on paper, as well as I might, those thoughts that came to me when, with it, came the invitation to attend this memorable occasion. Dear friends and gentle hearts, the pulse quickens, the lips tremble, and the eyes dim as one speaks these words. Five little words that always seemed to me to be the last will and testament of Stephen Collins Foster. We who are gathered here in observance of the 100th anniversary of the writing and copywriting of Suwannee River, old folks at home, surely recall the tragic circumstances of his passing. How, in addition to the 38 cents, 3 pennies and 35 cents in scrip, the pants, vest, shoes, hat, and overcoat, there was discovered in one of his pockets a scrap of paper on which was penciled, "Dear friends and gentle hearts." It is then reasonable and logical that the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers should, without hesitation, yes, with the utmost of goodwill and in deepest humility, ask that its voice should be mingled with those of the dear friends and gentle hearts today gathered at White Springs in the shadow of the Stephen Foster Memorial on the Suwannee. Why do I say reasonable and logical? Because our society is dedicated to the responsibility that never again shall inspired creators of American song suffer the fate that was Foster's. 38 cents, 3 pennies, 35 cents in scrip, pants, vest, shoes, hat, overcoat, breathing his last in the free ward of Bellevue Hospital up in New York. When it was suggested that I should make this sentimental journey to White Springs and articulate for the thousands of members of ASCAP the cumulative impulses of appreciation and friendship for you and your Stephen Foster centennial celebration, I was at once overcome with the honor that such an opportunity bestowed on me. Why, I asked our president, Otto Harbach, do you ask me, of all the numerous members of distinguished authors and composers, each or all of whom would have seized the opportunity to attend? And Mr. Harbach, a great librettist, not without sense of humor, said, you owe a special debt to Stephen Foster. And then I recalled that some 30 years ago, when I was still a little boy, a friend and I were riding uptown on a Riverside Drive bus looking down on the Hudson River. That friend was George Gershwin, and we were on our way home to write a song. And that song turned out to be, with all apologies, the Latter-day Suwannee. Why were we conscious of the Suwannee, we who had never been south of the Battery? We who hardly knew whether the Suwannee flowed through Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, or Florida. Ah, but we were Americans. And what American, thanks to Stephen Foster, didn't know that there was a Suwannee River? Never having seen the Suwannee, writing a song about it, we were in excellent company. Stephen Foster had never seen the river that he immortalized. The fact is that it should come as not too great a surprise that the South should have seized on the imagination of Stephen Foster, because through the years, your South has been a veritable treasury of inspiration to imaginative songwriters, many of whom successfully wrote songs about the South before they could enjoy the luxury of a vacation in your fabulous, enchanting country. Let me quote a few lines from songs that in their time achieved a fantastically wide appreciation, by which I mean, of course, they sold in the millions. Now, bear in mind that their composers and authors had never set foot across the Mason-Dixon line before the songs were written. For example, and I must restrain myself from singing because I wish I was singing this speech, three young writers, some many years ago, wrote a song that swept America, and it went something like this. It said, "Just to make our clothes, the cotton grows in dear old Alabama. Each hungry mouth looks to the south for sweet Virginia ham. From Tennessee comes melody that's played by every band. And if you're talking of chicken, oh, Maryland," and he goes on that way. And then Irving Berlin, 40 years ago, who had never been south of Chinatown, where he was a waiter. He was a waiter in Chinatown, but the South seized upon his imagination. And he wrote a song, "When that midnight choo-choo leaves for Alabama, I'll be right there, I've got my fare. When I meet that rusty-haired conductor man." And that was a song that seized on the imagination of millions and millions of people who had never seen the South. Then there was an immortal song of Walter Donaldson's. And Gus Kahn, they had been basking in the sunshine of Chicago when they wrote the song. You know, I think some of you know the song. "Nothing could be finer than to be in Carolina in the morning." And here is really one of the great songs, written about 45 years ago by the same Walter Donaldson of Chicago Sunshine, and a Mr. William Jerome, who came from New York City, as far south as that. But they did write a very fine song that I think even Stephen Foster would have appreciated. Of course, it's written in the colloquialisms of the 1915s. It says, "Back home in Tennessee, just try to picture me, right on my mother's knee, she thinks the world of me. All I can think of tonight is a field of snowy white," and so on. Hundreds of songs about the South, written because, somehow or other, almost spiritually, perhaps it's the sun, I don't know what it is, the South sends out its inspiration, as it did to our friend Stephen Foster. And I assure you, my friends, that my friends Kern, Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein, had not been Mississippi boatmen when they wrote Old Man River. By the way, speaking of songwriters and songs, have you ever noticed that no song has ever been written with hate as a theme? Hating a person or hating a place. That is to say that no song has ever achieved a wide popularity, has never become a hit. Music and hate, song and hate, do not like each other. They create discord. They do not harmonize. As a matter of fact, I once made that very point to a school assembly. I sometimes go to schools and sing my little safety songs for children. And then I tell them about songs, and, you know, and how nice it is to write good songs and constructive songs. And I said, "Now, boys and girls, there's never been one song written on hate." And a little fellow, uncomfortably alert that morning, raised his hand and said, "Ah, Mr. Caesar, just a moment. What about, oh, how I hate to get up in the morning?" And, well, he had me there. He had me there for a minute. But then I said, "My boy, the next line is, oh, how I'd love to remain in bed." So that song really is about love. It's not a negative thought. It's a positive thought. Stephen Foster knew well that you cannot sing of hate. All poets know this. Not once in all the 175 or 200 songs, we haven't the exact figure, I don't think, Mr. Curator, never once do we uncover a negative thought. Being here fills one with hope. Removed by 100 years from the age of innocence that brought forth in sweet poetic simplicity old folks at home, harassed in the midst of a world hysteria that fills the soul with doubt and fear, steeped in a cynicism that challenges our faith, and make shadow in our minds the mingled values of good and evil until, in our confusion, we often mistake one for the other, we discover that there still lives inside of us that reverence for the beautiful, for the simple, for the pure, for the peaceful, for the gentle, the understanding, the sympathetic, the humane, that breathe through all the songs of Stephen Foster. In the day of sophistication, when copybook maxims are scoffed at, when materialism and its handmaiden power are in many places in our world enthroned, yes, embraced and sometimes enshrined, we come back here at White Springs to the enduring values of human achievement. And what are those enduring values? They are those instincts, those dictates of the conscience, those true appraisals of our fellow man that placed on the lips of a Stephen Foster such a phrase as "dear friends and gentle hearts. Imagine, if you can, on this Sunday, in the hundreds of thousands of places of worship, if each one of us were to turn to his neighbor for a brief moment and say, "Dear friend and gentle heart," does that sound like the daydreamer's wish never to be fulfilled? Hardly. The fact is that we do not remember the men of power who died 90 years ago, but we do remember Stephen Foster. I cannot tell you who was the richest man in Jerusalem when Christ died, but I can tell you there was Christ. Long after the reigning monarchs of Britain shall have been forgotten, Shakespeare, Milton, Shelley, Byron, Keats, Wordsworth will still breathe life and beauty into the language we speak. Who ruled Italy in the times of Dante? I know not. But of Dante, surely we all know. Who were Longfellow's richest neighbors? I know not. But Longfellow I know, and so do you. What princes, friends of the arts though they might have been, were the patrons of Beethoven, Liszt, Brahms, Chopin, Bach, Haydn? Those I do not know, but the composers and their works are immortal. Perhaps that is what is meant by "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." And so it is with all artists, not with the sword, not with bricks and mortar, not with gold, but with the spirit, the voice that speaks from the heart, the song that echoes from the soul. Is man immortalized? Stephen Foster was such a man, a meek man, a humble man, that his music and words reflected that true humility which in the artist is the yardstick of greatness, is already evidenced in the vitality and continuing influence of a creative life crowded into the 38 fleeting years that were allotted to him. A few moments ago, I referred to the copybook Maxim era in our country. Somehow, I cannot dissociate Stephen Foster from the simple, universal truths inherent in the copybook Maxim. And I must measure progress or retrogression in relation to the degree to which we embrace the fundamental truths that have been handed down to us. A few years ago, a colleague, a songwriter friend of mine, a member of ASCAP, Mr. Herman Hupfeld, I think he's passed on, expressed it rather admirably in the following manner. He said, "You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is still a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by." And as time goes by, Stephen Foster, Stephen Foster's melodies, his warm, spontaneous rhymes, expressing the hopes, the defeats, the yearnings, the trials, the gaiety and sadness of the ordinary man that strikes such a resplendent chord in the hearts of millions of people, not only in our own country, but throughout the world, seem to be the crystallization of the proof that God's children are made up of the ordinary man. They are the true nobility, not the sophisticates, not the intellectual cynic, not the hypercritical so-called man of the world, but the man who still dares to speak of dear friends and gentle hearts. Such a man Stephen Foster surely was, sent to us to give expression to those deep feelings that all of us possess, perhaps, but few of us know how or dare to express. God does indeed work in mysterious ways his wonders to perform. He creates a beautiful southland with the Suwannee River flowing through it. Up north in Pittsburgh, he creates a Stephen Foster and fills him with melody and poetry and imagination. And the poet from Pittsburgh dips his imagination into that stream which he has never seen, and the Suwannee River ever flows and lives in the hearts and minds of millions and millions and millions of people as time goes by. Hail then to Stephen Foster, the poet, the composer, the daydreamer. Stephen Foster, he of the imagination, who can deny that the ultimate in realism is anything less than a dream? Who has power to extend his life beyond the grave, if not the poet, the dreamer? Dear friends and gentle hearts, Stephen Foster still lives, not only on the banks of the Suwannee, but on the lips of innocent children who will sing his songs in the classrooms of the country tomorrow morning, on the pianos of millions of homes in our cities, valleys, farms of America, in the American tradition and its dream of tomorrow, and in the hallowed precincts of memory of such dear friends and gentle hearts as are here gathered this afternoon. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Caesar. You certainly didn't disappoint us. And we want you to take back with you to your busy offices in New York the greetings and thanks of the Foster Memorial Commission, our state officials, and all of the people gathered here for your contribution and for your work in connection with the Foster Melodies. At this time, Dr. Giffen will direct the Stetson Choir in their final appearance, Swanee River. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Giffen and young folks of Stetson University. We now come to the final event on today's program, the appearance of the University of Florida Band in the second part of the band program. Under the able direction of the Director of Bands of the University of Florida, Colonel Harold O. Bachman. It will take just a moment or two for them to get ready, and we hope that if you haven't had time to do so after the band finishes, that you will look through the museum, perhaps drive around the grounds and see the location of where the other parts of this memorial will be built. It's your memorial, it belongs to you, it belongs to the music-loving people of the world.